Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Tuesday, October 18th, 2011. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and today I'm joined by two writers who are looking forward to a very relaxing bye week off. We have Tom Green.
I'm ready to just go to Vegas and bet all the money that I have on the bye week plus four.
All right, and we have Matt Watts.
I got the bye week blues.
I didn't know we were going to get serenaded. All right, that's a nice surprise. So, yeah, we're coming out on Tuesday because we are fresh off of Muschamp presser this noon. Only other media stuff we have this week is tomorrow, teleconference. So we usually don't get a ton out of that. So we thought we could do it today at this time. We would get you all the Gators news, and plus Watts was in Jacksonville on Monday. But, yeah, so a lot of reasons, but we're coming out with this on Tuesday. Before we get started, remember to send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. We always like to hear from you guys. Got one or two this week, so we'll get to those a little later on in the show. And, yeah, just hit us up there because we always like to get you guys involved. And anything you tell us about the way you want to structure it or who you want to hear from or what you want to hear about, we're definitely willing to help you out on that. And one of the biggest things that came out of this weekend and this morning's Muschamp press conference was kind of his little tirade on the sidelines, the way he berates the officials and their reaction to it. Right, and this is not much of a change from anything we've seen from Muschamp this year, but the fact that it was caught on camera and there's audio circulating around the internet that if you haven't seen it, it's probably worth a look. But again, not exactly suitable for children, but very interesting stuff. So, I mean, what was your guys' take on that? What did he say this morning that stood out to you?
He said that that wasn't going to be acceptable at the University of Florida. He said it was very tough. He says he's not going to change. That's who he is. I mean, I think you're still going to have to see the same type of behavior on the sideline. He just might curb the cursing down. He said it was tough to go home and explain to his 6-year-old and his 10-year-old about why daddy's cussing on live television. So I think that was the issue for him. I'm sure somebody at the university higher up said something to him about it as well. It's not a good look for the head coach when the blogs are blowing up with all this stuff. I think he did get helped out by this was just an entire weekend of coaches going crazy. You had the Jim Schwartz, Jim Harbaugh thing. You had the Franklin and Grantham thing with the Georgia and Vanderbilt. So it was just a whole weekend of coach craziness.
I think that, you know, this is something that he's been doing all season. I mean, we might not have been able to hear the audio the other games, but we could read his lips on the sideline when the cameras are on him. It's just the fact of the matter is this time the microphones actually picked it up, so he felt compelled to have to apologize for that. He says it's not going to be tolerated, but, I mean, it's going to happen. All of us curse all the time. It happens. we've had to re-record parts of this show at times because people have cursed.
Right.
But the point is, like, that's just who he is. Coaches get angry. They get fiery. They get mad at calls one way or another. It's going to happen. He said he's going to try to cut back on it, but it's not something that's going to be easy.
Right. I'm with you guys on everything you've said so far, and the only thing I want to ask is do you guys see any chance anything changes going forward? Because I think he's just going to be exactly the same way he is.
I mean, I think he's going to be the same, but I think he needs to change a little bit, especially in his interaction with the officials. I mean, it's not going to help him going forward to tell an official he needs to get his head out of his rear end. I mean, that's just not going to help him with any officials going forward. It's not just fans and, you know, administrators of the university and other people that see this. The officials see this as well. Like, the officials have their own little circle, and this gets talked about. I mean, obviously, no coach treats an official with, you know, great utmost respect or care, but I think Will Muschamp is kind of on the far other end of that spectrum. And he called a timeout during that game. I mean, and immediately during that timeout, used the entire timeout to berate the officials. And it was immediately after Chris Rainey muffed a punt. Instead of getting his team ready for that quick change situation, his defense getting them prepared for that situation, what he's doing is yelling at the officials and getting caught on ESPN cameras, cursing and yelling up a storm. That's not going to help him going forward. He needs to change that a little bit, in my opinion.
Yeah, he just needs to take, like, some tranquilizers or something, calm himself down during the game. Because, I mean, it's not just the officials. I mean, he gets amped up with his players, too. He darn near broke Rancy McCray's neck celebrating with him one play.
Right, yeah, he's certainly an animated character.
I mean, the players feed off of that, but they also need to feed off, you know, hey, you need to be prepared for this situation. And immediately after that, Dominic Easley jumped off sides, and Auburn scored their first touchdown, which ended up being the game-winning points. So, I mean, I'm not trying to say that was the reason why they gave up that play, but they could have been more prepared for that situation had Muschamp not, you know, lost his mind on the officials.
All right, this is all fair, but at the same time, I feel like if you're a recruit and you're watching this game, you kind of want to play for that guy.
Yeah, no doubt. Marcus May,
a UF commit right now, tweeted during the game after Muschamp had that blow up. He's like, yeah, Will Muschamp is that dude. Like, he's happy he's going to Florida to play for that coach. But at the same time, I feel like that's the type of intensity that you'd rather see from your coordinators, and you want your head coach to be a little more level-headed.
Right. I think he's struggling to make that transition.
Yeah, he needs to find an even keel.
Okay, the natural place to start with our recap of Florida's 17-6 loss is the quarterback play once again. Jacoby Brissett started, was 5 of 10 for 45 yards and interception. Then at halftime he got benched and Jeff Driscoll came in, was 9 of 18 for 75 yards. Obviously neither of them looked that great and neither of them did enough to win, but at this point in their careers, are either of you guys worried about either of these two, and what did you make of Saturday's performance?
I'm not too worried. I think it's all just a matter of, you know, getting those reps in practice. They clearly don't have a rapport with the receivers right now. And that's just a matter of not getting to practice with them enough to know their tendencies and everything like that. But, I think they've shown glimpses. They've got the arm strength. They can make plays with their feet, but it's just a matter of getting on the same page with the rest of the offense.
I don't even think it's getting on page with this offense. I think it's just getting actual good players around them, because they don't have that right now. They don't have any number one receiver, probably not even a number two receiver on a good team in the SEC. They haven't had success in the running game against good teams. The offensive line is porous. They just don't have a chance to show that they're anything but freshmen right now.
Well, I mean, against the same kind of competition, because I don't think Auburn's defense, which was way down in the SEC in terms of pass defense, is any that much worse than what they saw against Tennessee and maybe even what they saw against Kentucky. And Brantley did just fine there. So you don't put any of this on the quarterbacks, even given that?
I mean, of course you got to put a little bit on the quarterbacks, but when they're splitting reps in practice, they're in their first year, and neither of them, you know, had an idea that they were going to be starting at this point in the season, you kind of have to give them a little bit of leeway. But at the same time, John Brantley can make up for the gaps in all the play around him because he's in his fifth year at Florida. He knows a little bit more about being a quarterback in the SEC than these two guys do.
Well, are you calling John Brantley a good quarterback then if he can make up for average play on the rest of the team? Because nobody would have said that even a month ago.
I wouldn't have said it a month ago, but obviously you have to give him some of that credit, because look at the offense now. In the first quarter, in the first half against Alabama, John Brantley was tearing things up. That's the only thing you can go on. I mean, you can't go on and say, well, if John Brantley, you know, wasn't here, that they'd be, you know, worse. If John Brantley was here, they'd be worse. I mean, you kind of have to give some credit to Brantley.
So you're saying that John Brantley is so good, he was like the only guy that can make the offense work. It's not that the freshmen now are bad. Brantley is just that good that he was making
up for all
these
faults. It's not that John Brantley is that good, is that they're so far behind the curve.
Does that worry you, though? That's fine?
There's nothing you can do about it at this point. I mean, of course it's a worry, but what else can you do? You have to go forward with what you got.
Well, I mean,
how do you think John Brantley would have fared if he was put in Driscoll and Brissett's situation as a freshman if Tebow got injured like he did?
I mean, probably badly, but I don't know. That's why John Brantley didn't turn out to be as great as people thought he would be. Like, I think that the fact that these guys aren't doing well to some extent is a bad sign for the future. I don't think you can expect great things from them, but it's not unfair to expect them to be a little bit better, especially against a defense as bad as Auburn. I mean, everybody wants to say, well, they didn't get all the reps, and Driscoll was a little bit banged up, and they're young players, but there's a lot of freshmen playing college football, and some of them do pretty well. So I can't just write this all off as easily as everybody else can. I don't know if you guys are on that train with
anybody else. I'm not trying to, like, make excuses for them and say that, you know, all this, you know, handicaps that they've been experiencing should, you know, give them a free pass for playing poorly. Of course, they're expected to play better, but, you know, you've got to factor in all the other things that go into it, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's just not a great situation for them to be in, all things considered, but they can play better.
All right, based off what Muschamp said this morning, what's the quarterback situation going to be like going forward? What are we looking at? Is Brantley going to be back against Georgia?
He said Brantley mentally wants to be back, but it's not looking like that right now. I mean, he's not going to practice at all this week. They said they hope to get him back next Monday, which would, you know, if they can get him back, give him a full week of practice going into Georgia. But, you know, that's remains to be seen. We don't know the specifics of the injury. We don't even know what the injury is, other than something with his ankle, which Muschamp has slipped up a couple times and said. He said that Brissett and Driscoll are going to continue to split reps 50-50 in practice, which I think is asinine. Yeah. Commit to one, don't just continue to split. One of them needs all the reps if you're going to have any success. Give one of them all the reps. I don't know.
Well, I mean, which one? How do you pick? And how is that fair to the other guy? Because you don't want somebody just transferring out on you because he feels like he's not getting a fair deal.
I don't think anybody, if they're going to transfer out because they're not getting a fair deal right now, then that's, you don't need that player anyway.
I mean, if you're the if you're the number one or the number three quarterback recruit and you're not getting any snaps in practice because they want to give it to another freshman, I think you might feel a little bit slighted.
I mean, you'll still get snaps in practice. It's just the first team snaps. So one of them needs consistent snaps with that first team to be able to make that offense even work remotely. Because you've seen what happens when, you know, they're splitting reps. This offense is just sputtering, not doing anything. The most effective that offense was, and I hate to say this, when Trey Burton was running the Wildcat.
Right. Okay, but I just feel like even though it's like one person gets all the first team reps, if you're the guy getting all the second team reps, you're basically being told you're not as good as the other guy. Why would you stay at this school when you're still one of the best freshman quarterbacks in the nation?
Because it's not like this is the final end-all be-all.
Well, that's what you're saying if you're going to give one of the guys a snap and commit, in your guy's words, to that guy as the starter.
You're committing to them in the absence of John Brantley. Not, you know, it's not to say that Jacoby Brissett's going to be the starter for the rest of his career at Florida. It's just in the absence of John Brantley. At the end of this season, it would go back to an open competition between the two.
Okay, well, here's my point is that after this year, it is the absence of John Brantley, and he is gone. And what happened with the Cam Newton situation where he ended up leaving was he felt he was behind Brantley on the depth chart, and he wanted to get out.
Urban Meyer said that John Brantley will be the starter before, and they didn't give them a chance to have an open competition in practice.
But if you're going to give a guy the head start to say he's the starter right now in the absence of John Brantley, and he's going to get all the first-team reps these weeks in practice, that's the same kind of head start if you're not explicitly saying it, the same thing's implied.
Well, the thing
it's for me, it's 1 week. It's 1 week, 2 weeks to get until you get John Brantley back. It's not saying that this is the guy. It's saying this is what we're going to do so we can have success while John Brantley is out. Because obviously, what they've been doing the last 2 weeks doesn't work.
I mean, I think it would be for the best for them to pick a guy and go with that guy, but politically, that's tough for them to do to keep everybody happy and keep them on
politics.
The same page.
You're not going to worry about on-field performance.
On top of that, you don't even know who's the better player. You don't know, how do you know which guy to give all the reps to at this point?
That's a good question.
Would you just flip a coin? They've been the same.
Well, they've also seen them in practice. We haven't seen that.
Seeing them in practice got them to the point where they're both playing, so that probably didn't help them a lot either. I don't think you can just flip a coin and say, this guy's going to get all the reps for now because we feel like it.
It's kind of what we talked about in the car. Charlie Weiss likes Jacoby Brissett, and Will Muschamp probably likes Jeff Driscoll. I mean, it's one of those back-and-forth things. I don't know if you're going to be able to make a decision between the two, but you kind of have to because it's not helping the offense. It's not helping the team to continue to split it evenly and say, we don't know who's going to be the quarterback until Friday or until Saturday.
Yeah.
Because even, like, we saw it during the game, Brad Beal and you know, Kenny Boynton tweeting, put Jacoby back in the game. And if these guys on athletes for the basketball team have those feelings, then there's got to be players on the football team with those same feelings. So when you do this back and forth BS, you're creating division and you're creating no solidarity on the offense. And how can that be a positive? I don't understand how that's a positive.
It could be true, like you said, before we get any further, that Weiss was a guy who recruited Brissett very hard after he came here, for the listeners who weren't familiar with the situation. Brissett was not on UF's radar. Urban Meyer had offered him a gray shirt. That was all the interest Florida had had in Brissett. And then when Weiss came aboard, he kind of was talking to him a lot more, and then they ended up landing him late, kind of unexpectedly, after signing day, actually, when Driscoll had already been signed. So that's that situation. And, yeah, like I'm saying, I just think to tell one of the guys that they're the number two and not really be able to prove it based on the fact that you couldn't decide in practice and the game film clearly doesn't kind of show a difference between either one. It's rough on whichever guy gets the raw end of the stick. And I guess that would be why they're leaving it open, because I don't think that's the ideal way to work it out. But I don't see how you could just say, like we said, like on the flip of a coin between two same options to say one of them's better.
If they're worrying about the emotional fragileness of these two freshmen, then they've got more problems on their hands than we even can consider. Because that shouldn't even be a part of the consideration. It should not. It should be on-field performance.
Well, it's not even emotional. Well, okay, but on-field performance, we don't know. So it's like, what's
it's
fair?
Because we don't know because they've
screwed up the situation.
Exactly.
They haven't handled it well at all.
Driscoll got forced into the situation against Alabama. Then he hurt himself. So then they didn't know if they were going to have Driscoll or Brissett for LSU. So they went back and forth, flip-flop. Then Brissett starts LSU, plays poorly. Then Brissett starts against Auburn, and he doesn't do anything in the first half, and they bring Driscoll back in. So you can't –
Well, then you can't blame that on coaches. You blame that on injury. If they think Driscoll's the best, the second guy, and they said he was second string behind John Brantley, and then he goes in and gets hurt, now you literally do not know if you will have him or not have him. And, like, how you can't just say, well, because he might be hurt, Jacoby Brissett's definitely the guy. That's stupid, because then you're putting your second, third option out there.
I understand, like, they probably handled it as best they could for the LSU game because Driscoll was injured. But last week they came out and said, you know, Driscoll's ankle is not a factor this week in practice.
Yeah, I doubt that's
true. Yeah, you know, you take it with a grain of salt because it's what they're telling us. But the fact is, if they're saying that his ankle's not an issue, then make a decision on one of them. Don't be splitting them 50-50 still. Make a decision, go with it, stick with your decision, show confidence in one of them instead of a little bit of confidence in each.
Yeah, that's what you would do if the ankle wasn't an issue, but the ankle was clearly an issue because we thought it wasn't an issue the week before and then he ended up not playing.
Did it look like an issue to you during the game against Auburn?
No, not this week. But they didn't know that until the game, apparently, because they always say they don't know who's going to start, and then Brissett ended up starting. And then against LSU, it clearly was, because he didn't play.
Well, they said at the beginning of the week, like, I mean, obviously, take it with a grain of salt, but the ankle wasn't an issue in practice.
At the beginning of the LSU week, he wasn't listed on the injury report. So that doesn't mean anything.
He did not look limited at all by the ankle against Auburn to me.
Yeah, it was heavily taped, but, I mean, he was still, you know, mobile. You saw it. He had that one run early in the second half where he got, like, 11, 12 yards.
Okay, but that doesn't mean that Monday he wasn't limited by all. Like, so if he's limited then you have to kind of split the rest because you don't know, and it's unfortunate. Maybe this week they should be able to decide. If there was a time, now
right,
would be
that's,
it.
That's,
I can't question what they've
the
done
point
up till now.
The conversation is because Muschamp continued this morning saying that it was going to be 50-50 again. In the past, you're right, injuries, situational stuff played into it. But now, neither is injured. They've both had plenty of experience. You should be able to make a decision going forward about who's your best option to play against Georgia should John Brantley not be able to play.
Okay, well, do you think it would still be 50-50 this week if they didn't have the bye week coming up?
I think they would tell us it's 50-50.
Okay, well, because I think there's a chance that, you know, since they have the bye week and Brantley could be thrown into the mix, that they're kind of still keeping the audition open because it's not like they needed a week to prepare for somebody. They just kind of have a week to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that logic there, but, you know, it still doesn't – I don't know. I just don't see the benefit, really, to continuing to not name one guy and leaving it open for everybody to wonder. Maybe that's not what they're doing on the inside, but that's what the perception is on the outside, is that they can't make a decision and that there's going to be, you know, parties that want Brissett to start and parties that want Driscoll to start.
Yeah, if I'm a coach, I want my team, not just the quarterback, to help with his confidence in his comfort zone, but the team around him to know who's going to be starting that week. Because although they are very similar players, they're different people.
Right. All right. I think we've about hashed this out, but if I had to put you guys on the spot today for a guess who starts against Georgia, just throw a name out there. Who do you guys think it's going to be?
Dang. I don't know. That's a tough question. That's a really tough question. I'm going to have to call some insider sources and get back to you on that one.
part of what I'm thinking is, like, we think we're going to learn stuff in the next 14 days, but we know pretty much as much now as we're going to know then in terms of what's going on and how they're thinking and who's hurt and who's not, so... I mean, guess now is going to be as good as a guess Friday before the game, most likely, but...
I'll say John Brantley's ankle will still not be good enough, and I'll venture to say Driscoll will get the start this time.
Yeah, I think... I'm going to go with Brantley. I think they're going to get him out there if he's even remotely healthy, but... Anyway, that's enough on the quarterback. Something we touched on a little bit was the running game. Ran for just 66 yards against Auburn, which is not the best rush defense in the SEC by any stretch, but... Only 66 yards. Rainey carried 16 times for 33. A guy we'll talk about a lot, Mike Gillisley, carried 3 times for 16 yards. We actually have an email on this from Marshall Spivak, and he said, Gillisley got 3 carries, three in all caps, What is up with Weiss? 5 question marks. Play him, damn it, So I think that's pretty much a common sentiment among Gator Nation, if you will, right now. So
right.
What did you guys see from the running game, and why didn't Gillislee not get more involved?
What running game?
Yeah, I mean, there was no running game again. I mean, Muschamp actually mentioned Gillislee when he was talking about injuries this morning. So maybe he got banged up during the game, and maybe that was the reason. But even then, Chris Rainey was not effective in the first quarter, in the entire first quarter, and they didn't give the ball to Gillislee once. I mean, there were some murmurs that Gillislee was going to get the start. He was a team captain for the game. I don't understand why they didn't go to him sooner. When they did go to him, he was effective. He went, I think, 8 yards on his first carry. And when he cuts upfield. He hits the hole and he goes forward. I mean, you watch Chris Rainey. He cuts 7 times to get 4 yards. He runs 20 yards to get 4 positive yards. It's ridiculous. So, I mean, I don't understand the logic in not going to Gillislee sooner.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting after the game when Muschamp was like, oh, we didn't get him more carries because we weren't getting anything in the run game. So he was going to stick with Chris Rainey, who lost yardage on 3 plays and gained 0 yards on another 3. I mean,
right.
Gillislee was obviously your most effective running back in that game. Get him some more carries, unless his injury, whatever it may have been, was that bad.
Right. It was weird to me that the injury did not get mentioned after the game, because he was asked directly about Gillislee, so I don't know what the deal is with that. I don't even want to speculate.
You think it's weird that they wouldn't tell you a player was injured?
Well, just because... when Driscoll's injury came out, it was because somebody asked him directly about Driscoll,
and it kind of just came up.
Yeah. I don't know. He told us about a lot of other injuries we hadn't known about previously after the game, so I don't see why Gillislee being banged up wouldn't have gotten his little list. But especially with no bye week, it doesn't serve any kind of competitive advantage for 2 weeks ahead of time to not let that kind of news out. But anyway, with Rainey, I was surprised that they couldn't have more success with him because of Auburn's defense, like we said. But it seemed like every time Rainey tried to get to the edge, those guys were just – the Auburn defense was fast, and they always just beat him out there. So, I mean –
Well, there was penetration in the backfield off the edge a lot of those times, and that goes down to the tackle play. And the tackles throughout the game were rotated. There was not Xavier Nixon at left tackle, Chaz Green at right tackle. That doesn't happen with this line. It's a constant rotation, and that doesn't help in the passing production. It doesn't help in the run game either. You don't have any consistency on the line. You don't have any you know confidence in who you're following on the outside to know that they're going to pick up the block. When you got Matt Patchen sometimes, Chaz Green sometimes, Xavier Nixon sometimes, it's kind of difficult. And penetration's the killer of the run game, and that's what happened to them.
Yeah, I mean, the offensive line as a whole has been pretty bad, and it looked like a strength in the beginning. It's been bad since then, and then more of a carousel thing. We had Dan Wenger go out with injury, and then that brought Kyle Coney in, and Nixon did not start once again, but then he wound up playing significant time, and Patchen was out, and then Patchen moves over to right tackle, and Chaz Green was out. So I don't know if they're just trying to find the best option, trying to find something that works, or if they think there's some kind of competitive advantage to a rotation, but...
I don't see a competitive advantage at all.
Offensive line's definitely not
every good
done.
Offensive line plays the same 5 guys throughout the game, unless one gets injured. You might switch out for a couple plays because somebody gets gassed or something, but other than that, it's the same 5 guys. Right. And the Gators haven't had the same 5 guys on the offensive line for one game for the entire season.
All right, and we're about 20 minutes into the show, so it's officially the time of the week when we talk about how bad the receivers are. Frankie Hammond had 4 for 40 yards. Trey Burton had 4 for 23 yards. Not exactly a wide receiver, but actually catching the ball. Deontay Thompson had 3 for 16. Is there any hope for anybody in this group? I mean, Hammond looked nice. We liked him. He was always the most consistent guy, but... Any hope for one of these guys?
He looked all right against Auburn's defense. He disappeared against Alabama and LSU in pretty much every other game. I don't have any confidence in not one of the receivers, none of them.
Yeah, I mean, if Andre DeBose could just see the field more, you know, stay healthy on that ankle or whatever it may be at this point, I would just chuck it up to him every play at this point.
Yeah, because
that's your best receiving
option. Got to mention that DeBose was banged up during the game, so... The one guy that did look pretty good on 2 catches for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns the last couple weeks, Andre DeBose, was out of action for that reason. But it's still pretty bleak with this group. Do we even have any – like, do we think DeBose and Hammond are the healthy starters now? Or are they sticking with Thompson and Dunbar, who Dunbar made his return, didn't do anything? Like,
well,
what?
DeBose – you can't count on DeBose. I mean, he either gets injured or he disappears. In the Alabama game and the LSU game, yeah, he had a catch for 65 yards and a touchdown. But how many catches did he have in those 2 games combined?
Three catches.
I mean, that's not a dependable option at wide receiver. And then you also you're handicapped in the kick game because you want to use DeBose as your kick returner because he's your most dynamic guy. But then he gets hurt returning kicks and he can't play at all. So how can you depend on any of these receivers when your best one can't stay healthy and the others can't show up on a consistent basis, if at all?
Yeah, it's sad. I think their most reliable receiving threat right now is Jordan Reed.
Really? My next question was, is Jordan Reed awful?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. He's not good, but he's been their best receiver for the most part. I know he dropped a couple passes.
He had one
Auburn.
Catch for 5 yards. He dropped the ball. He jumped out of bounds for no reason one time.
He didn't get a chance to make the play on the flea flicker, which he should have.
That's true.
But other than that, he looks cumbersome. He looks awkward when he jumps and catches every single pass.
And the thing is, even the flea flicker play is not like Jordan Reed. That's just a trick play.
Right,
he's the guy that was there.
Right, right,
Christian
right.
does that. You know, Trey Burton could have done that.
Exactly.
Anybody could have done that.
Quentin Dunbar did it against UAB.
Trey Burton can run down the field and be wide open when you're not being covered. That's not that difficult.
Trey Burton can't run downfield. Here's the thing. You've seen him after he catches the ball.
That's fair, too. But, I mean, Reed's not exactly a speedster either. And we thought... Somebody compared him to Aaron Hernandez before the season. Y'all remember that?
A lot of things were said before the season that
I compared AC Leonard to Hernandez.
To be nothing.
I mean, not one of us, like one of the players compared him to Aaron Hernandez. I don't know. It's the outlook is bleak for these guys right now. Switching over to the defensive side, Florida's run defense. I mean, it's an improvement from what we saw against Alabama and LSU. Still not great. Gave up 155 yards to Auburn. But, I mean, held Dyer to 73. He came in as one of the SEC's leading rushers. The SEC leading rusher, I'm pretty sure. So, I mean, not a terrible effort from them. What did you guys think about the performance of that group?
Yeah, I mean, the defensive line played the run a lot better. You saw some actual penetration there. They didn't allow too much around the edge. They didn't allow too many big plays. But there was still some, you know, missed assignments, some poor tackling. There was still some... You know, they had to bring Matt Elam in as the nickel corner and keep eight in the box to stop the run. So it's not like they were doing it with just their front four or their front seven. They had to bring extra help. So, I mean, I'm not completely sold, but it was an improvement, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely a big improvement from the last two games when, you know, Alabama and LSU both ran for over 200 yards on them. But I was impressed with what Matt Elam was able to do in helping stop the run a little bit. He had a couple tackles for loss there, getting some penetration. But, yeah, overall, it was better, but not great.
Yeah, Elam tied for the team lead with 9 tackles. I was also pretty impressed because as a safety, you would like that he could be a roamer, but if you're going to ask him to play in the box, he did a good job of doing that, and that's what the role he had this weekend. So.
Yeah, I mean, another thing was they actually played the run better and set the edge better without Ronald Powell in the game. I thought Laurente McCray and Willie Green played decent. Laurente McCray was, I think, maybe it doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but he made plays. He was one of the best players on defense for them. He came up in critical situations and made a play, which is something that they didn't do the last couple of games. I'm pretty sure they held Auburn to 1 of 13 on third down. So, I mean, they made plays.
Right, and I think McCray's been doing that kind of stuff all year. I've been impressed with him throughout.
He's quietly been having a good season for them.
Yeah, he gets some quarterback hurries. He makes some tackles. He makes some plays behind the line of scrimmage, which is pretty rare for this team. And then, again, like the opposite of that, we saw John Bostic with 9 more tackles. Still kind of just making plays as they come to him and getting tackles just by default. You guys agree with that? He's just kind of taking what's coming to him, right? He's not really being the aggressive guy and making plays and making the defense better with his play.
Yeah, he's just stopping it when it gets to his level.
He's not
really making that effort to stop it, you know, where it needs to be stopped, but he's not letting it get past him.
He's played marginal at best. I've seen some actual good things from him in being used as a blitzer in zone blitzes in the pass game, but they haven't been able to do that the last 3 games as teams have run almost twice as much as they've passed against Florida. So, you know, I didn't expect that coming in, but that's one bright spot for Mr. Bostic.
Yeah, among the guys on the line, you said they play a little bit better. Was there anybody in particular that stood out to you? I know Jay Howard had 6 tackles again, leading defensive lineman. He's been doing that all year.
Jay Howard, for me, is the guy on that defensive line. I've said it before. He's the only man that they have on that line. He's the only guy that can step up and tackle any of these running backs one-on-one. He gets solo tackles. You look at the stat sheet, Matt Elam and all these other guys, yeah, they've got a bunch of tackles, but they're all assisted tackles. Jay Howard has 5 solos. He's the leading tackler in solo tackles on the team. He also had a quarterback hurry and a tackle for loss. I mean, Jay Howard's just your most consistent guy up front. You need more guys like Jay Howard.
Yeah. Right. I was impressed by Dominic Easley's sack, where he didn't even touch the quarterback. And he just shoved the lineman into the quarterback.
That's a good play.
Had to give a bunch of credit to Easley, but that was just that lineman, I think, lost his balance. I mean, obviously, when Dominic Easley bull rushes you, you're going to lose your balance
a little bit. Easley credit. I think he's been good, especially as like a pass rusher and a penetrator all season. So I don't think that's kind of like a fluke play where it's the lineman's fault. I think Easley's been good.
Except for their first touchdown play when he jumped off sides and allowed them the free play.
Well, I mean, that's part of what you're going to get with Easley at this point in his career.
You can't have that. It's not to a point.
I mean, if the play doesn't go for a touchdown, nobody's really talking about that.
I mean, I think coaches are talking about that. It's been a constant
issue. Right, but it's not as big of a deal.
The problem for this team is jumping off sides and false starts, and that kills you. It kills you. Instead of a 3rd-and-8 situation or stopping a team on 3rd down, you're giving them a 1st down or you're giving them a way easier shot at a 1st down.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying it's a non-issue, but he's got to get better at that, but I don't think
he
gets
blown
out of proportion.
You can't just give it a pass and say, oh, Dominic Easley is such a high motor guy and he jumps off the
right. I'm not doing that.
That's okay.
He's just saying
I'm not doing that. I said it's not a non-issue.
People wouldn't be making it so much a big deal had Auburn not scored on that play.
Right,
and it's still a bonehead play on his part to give them those 5 yards. But if they don't get a touchdown, then you know it's just 5 yards, and he gets chewed out by the coaches.
And I mean, hopefully as his career goes on, he learns to curtail that, or else it's going to continue to be an issue and it will be a problem. But to do that once a game or so, hopefully less, but once a game, you can almost live with for the amount of disruption he makes in the backfield.
I haven't seen that constant disruption.
You haven't really?
Are you serious?
Are you serious?
You're serious.
Yeah.
You think Dominic Easley...
The amount of times he gets in the backfield and makes plays.
The Gators do not have pass rush.
Not from the edges for sure, but he's been good.
He's been good at times. He's not consistent.
A lot of times.
He is not consistent. Dominic Easley disappears.
No football player in the world gets great pass rush every single play.
I'm not asking him to get great pass rush every single play.
Well, I mean, then what are you asking him to do?
Consistent.
Define consistent. There's a number of snaps per game where
there's a lot of snaps in the game where Dominic Easley gets manhandled and does not have an effect on the play at all.
Against the pass, he's good. Against the run, he kind of struggles a little bit at times, which is the same thing.
I'm just not ready to say that anybody on this defense is great and that Dominic Easley or anybody should be lauded for their effect in the backfield. No. They don't have many sacks. They're getting destroyed in the run game. Why say anybody is good?
All right, that's your opinion, Tom. Weigh in.
I mean, I like what I've seen from Easley. At times, he does need to find consistency, but I do think he has probably been their best pass rusher. I mean, I know John Bostic leads the team in sacks right now, but that's coming in off of blitz. But just on the front four there, I think Easley's probably been their best pass rusher.
Right. I think a lot of their pass rush struggles definitely go to the guys on the edge. And we talked about Ronald Powell, how he's been bad. He didn't play. William Green, I mean, he's William Green, but he had 2 quarterback hurries, made a tackle, whatever that's worth. I mean, what did you guys think about William Green? Is he even that much of a drop-off from Ronald Powell at this point, considering how bad Powell's been?
No.
He played decent. I mean, his best play got negated because of an offsides call. Offsides or face mask, I forgot which one it was, but he made some plays, which is more than we can say for Ronald Powell for most of the games this season.
Right. All right. Now, moving over to the secondary, Auburn quarterback struggled, but that's not necessarily new. But anyway, 7 for 16, 123 yards. Secondary still seems kind of unproven to me. I know that's what Muschamp said this morning. Do you guys have anything to add to that? We really don't know with these guys at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the last 3 games, teams have run it 135 times and passed the ball just 55, I believe it is, which is just a staggering number. The secondary really hasn't been tested. Just a couple times each game, they've gotten beat deep, but not much else is going on there.
I mean, they made Jarrett Lee look like Joe Montana when he wanted to pass the ball.
Right.
I mean, Auburn, their quarterbacks are, way worse than even what Florida's got going on right now. So, I mean, they weren't tested against Auburn. They're going to find out this next game against Georgia. Georgia leads the SEC in passing. They've got, a great option at tight end in Orson Charles. They've got a young dynamic guy at wide receiver, freshman. They're going to get tested. I really think that this is the game where those numbers kind of come back even in the passing and the rushing, and that they're going to get beat deep against Georgia.
Right, and looking ahead to that game, I mean, what are they going to do with the bye week? How much of a difference can this really make? Can they get significantly better with 14 days to prepare for Georgia?
It's not about
the whole or Florida.
Just the team. Anybody. Any
can they
area
can that, they recruit during the bye week? Can they bring other guys in? I mean, I think that's the only way this team's getting better.
I heard Mike Sims Walker's looking for a place to play.
Yeah. I mean,
he's probably a better receiving option than anybody on that team right now.
That's a stretch.
I mean, but let's say if Brantley is hurt, maybe 2 weeks the quarterback play would be better. Would you expect that?
I don't know.
Maybe in 2 weeks Gillislee's not banged up and Jeff Demps is back and the running game improves. No hope there either. You guys don't buy that at all?
Even if Gillislee's not banged up, they haven't been using him.
Okay, but bringing Demps back won't help.
Was Demps effective against Alabama or LSU?
Hey, Demps was hurt.
Against Alabama?
Yeah, he hurt himself on a kickoff against Alabama.
Exactly. He had like carries.
He played two carries against LSU.
Maybe. Right. We haven't seen it. Demps is,
Can they teach the defense how to tackle in the next 2 weeks?
I don't think you can say that the offense is going to be better if Demps comes back, because you don't know if Demps is going to be even come back.
So with two weeks of...
He was hurt all last season after the 26-carry game against Tennessee, and he didn't do much against the big-time opponents last year. So why do we think he can do it this year?
You just don't see 2 weeks of rest, reps, and preparation making a difference for anybody across the
Demps
board.
Demps is just fragile. I mean, that's just how it is.
Outside of Demps?
I mean... I'd like to see Mike Gillislee get some carries, but who knows if that'll even happen. Sure.
Do you think the playbook would expand for Driscoll and Brissett with 2 weeks to think about it?
Yeah. If they're splitting reps in practice, it's limited by how much it can expand when you're only giving them half the reps.
Maybe the offensive line can put on 15 pounds each in the next 2 weeks.
I don't know. I'd be a little bit more optimistic than you guys. I think the same team we saw dominate the first four games are the same players that are doing this. They just don't have Brantley. And if they can play like they did the first couple weeks... They still wouldn't have beat Alabama or LSU, but they damn sure would have beat Auburn. I think there's a lot of room for improvement with the players they have this year, so I wouldn't be as down as you guys are. Okay, before we wrap up the Auburn game recap, one thing I want to make sure we touch on is special teams. We had a couple of interesting things happen this week, and the game mostly swung on the muffed punts. I mean, there was 3 Chris Rainey fumbles and 1 by Robert Clark. 2 of those wound up going back to Auburn and resulted in situations where... the last one was obviously where Auburn kicked the field goal and pretty much iced the game there. So, I mean, is this something that concerns you guys going forward, or did it just kind of happen?
I mean, it definitely concerns me going forward. I mean, obviously Auburn's punters gave them a look they hadn't seen from anybody else this year with the high booming kicks and the, you know, crazy hang time. But if you don't have a guy back there that can make the right decision as far as fair catching and getting the other players away from him if he's not going to catch it, and actually catching the ball, then you've got issues. I mean, there's a reason why they went to Robert Clark.
No, somebody's going to die on the show. Wow. Okay, anyway. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So but one thing I just want to say is because this was not an issue before this game. Like, there was never a time where I was like, these guys can't catch. They got to do something different in the return game. I mean, I thought Rainey shouldn't be back there for other reasons, but...
He made some questionable decisions in previous games as well, letting kicks bounce in front of him instead of catching them.
Right.
I mean, he hasn't shown the decision-making, you know, prowess that you want out of your punt returner.
Well,
And Muschamp said this morning they're going to look at some different guys back there.
Really? Okay, well, my only point was that I'm not worried, and I wouldn't have a problem if they did the exact same thing in terms of putting Rainey back there, putting Robert Clark back there in future games, just because they've been good up till now, and... I know it's hard to have an off night 3 times, but, I mean, it was a problem with the punter, maybe something about the lights. Anything could have been a cause for that, and I guess I don't expect it to be an issue going forward. Tom, do you have a take on that either way?
I mean, it's concerning, but I think it's something that they could easily correct in the 2 weeks that they have before Georgia. Like you said, it wasn't really much of an issue before that game. I think it was more Auburn's punter than anything.
Right. The last thing I want to say on that before we get away from the Auburn punt game is... I think UF should have tried harder to kind of get blocks and stuff,
yeah,
because
definitely.
Obviously the offense wasn't working and obviously they couldn't catch the ball, so I don't know why they weren't bringing more guys in that aspect.
Yeah, Muschamp talks all this about swinging the field position with the punt game, and you could have easily done that if you send a couple more guys. Solomon Patton a couple times came really close to blocking a punt. I mean, if you just send a couple more guys, you could probably get one of those in there, and that could be the difference in the game as opposed to your muff punts costing you.
Well, I mean... I don't know how you guys aren't concerned with that going forward. Like, I haven't seen anything positive from UF special teams at all this season.
Okay, well, I mean, that's something to be concerned about, but I don't mean in terms of just catching the ball. That's not something that I think is going to be a lingering issue.
I mean, it shouldn't be, but I don't think you can just say that it's not going to be
an
issue.
Right, you can't guarantee that.
Right. But, I mean, it's 2 weeks in a row where they've had humongous breakdowns on special teams that have hurt and or cost them the game. The fake punt against LSU was absolutely atrocious. And then you have four muff punts against Auburn. They switched their punter up. Caleb Sturgis has been the only bright spot on special teams.
They've also blocked three kicks this year.
One of them was inconsequential. It was a tip that barely had any impact. Another one was in a blowout against Kentucky. And the other one was, what,
like
Florida
FAU?
Atlantic? Yeah. Who cares?
So you're saying
in big-time games, in big-time situations, they're not making plays in special teams. It's not like they're not making plays. They're not even doing their job. When Urban Meyer was here, when Florida was good, they made plays on special teams in big-time games that won them games. They would not have even had a chance to play in the national championship had they not blocked a kick against South Carolina. Historically, Florida has played great special teams, and that is not the case this year.
Right. I'll say I don't think it's any harder to block a punt against one team than another, per se. I don't think that makes a huge difference, but
I mean,
it hasn't happened
it
in the
does.
Big games so
I mean,
far.
You've got
what do you mean?
Better personnel on punt block units against Alabama than against FAU.
Okay, but it's not like it's the top left tackle in the nation out there. It's just going to be some guys who are on the practice team and basically are just going out there and doing it. Second string players playing blocking.
Florida had John Bosick and Jelani Jenkins and Matt Elam running down.
No, on the coverage units, but I mean in terms of punt blocking up front to get the kickoff, I don't think that's a huge difference from team to team.
That's fair. All I'm saying is their special teams has been abysmal, and they're not getting any help from that unit. And when the rest of the units are playing terrible, you need something, some kind of spark in special teams, and
they
haven't got it.
And something you touched on real quick, apparently Kyle Christie is the new punter. Muschamp said his issue was the operation time. That's the phrase that he used, in terms of like being able to catch the ball, take the two steps you need to catch, and then kick it. But he averaged 46.1 yards per punt against Auburn, much higher than David Lerner's average, which I think was around 38. And his two of his first three kicks, he had a 67-yarder and a 53-yarder. And Lerner's season-long was 50. So, I mean, if he can get the operation time down, then he's clearly the guy as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Muschamp always said he was the stronger leg. He was always the guy that had the bigger upside as far as the punting goes. It was just a matter of him getting the mechanics of the actual punt down.
And you saw the issue where he had the fumble.
Had the drop,
so, I mean, he's still – I can't even say this. He's still, like, raw as a punter prospect. But, yeah, I mean, I guess he's going to be the future of the punter position at Florida. So, yeah, rest assured, everybody, the punter position is in good hands.
And if Caleb Sturgis' injury is any worse than they're letting it on to be, he might be the new Chaz Henry, take over some – kicking duties too.
Right, yeah, he kicked two field goals in the game and then had a leg injury. Is there anything new on that today?
Strained leg is what
he said that he should be ready for Georgia.
Yeah,
but,
a lot of people should be ready
for
a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah, how sad is it that
I believe Christie did kick field goals in high school though. So.
Yeah, he did. But how sad is it that arguably the best player on this team for the second year in a row, or the best person at their job, is the punter right now?
Yeah, it's the backup punter too. It's a sad commentary on the state of affairs at Florida. Okay, so that puts a cap on the Auburn section. We're going to move over to an email we got real quick. Same email I mentioned before from Marshall Spivak out in San Diego. He says it's a long email, so I'll give you a little Cliff Notes version, but I will read certain parts verbatim. He says, I have a bone to pick with UF football. I was class of 82, so yes, I am a geezer, but I am not a traditionalist. 35 years. Say that again and think about how much time that is. Almost twice your lifetime. Well, not for Watts. Do you realize the Gator football uniform has not changed since then? Yes, they added the round gator head, the blue pants, and some minor tweaks. But that striped pant shirt, script helmet thing looks like, and then I'm just going to censor this a little bit, crap. It looks so dated, it hurts recruiting. He goes on to talk about how at Maryland and Oregon, Chip Kelly and Randy Edsall have said that having the cool uniform makes recruits want to go there more. He's got some ideas for a gator skin print. He actually sent pictures, kind of did a little design stuff.
Marshall.
Can I see these pictures?
And then he kind of wants a... round gator head on the side, the pant leg at the hip, the gator skin print on the helmet, pant and shoulder would be orange or blue depending on the combination. I mean, do you guys have thoughts on the Florida jerseys? They've been the same for 35 years.
I mean,
hey, the Alabama jersey has been the same for more than 100 years. They don't have a problem recruiting. The Penn State uniform has been the same for the same amount of time. Ohio State, Texas, USC. You don't change the uniform. Oregon and Maryland have to do that. They have to do these hokey things because they have trouble recruiting, because they need the extra boost in recruiting. Sure, it helps them because they need that help. Florida doesn't need the help. They don't need to change the uniform. Marshall, I'm disappointed, man. You're an old guy or an older fella. I would expect you to have some love for the tradition of the game. Everybody that wants these new uniforms are the young whippersnappers like Greg and Tom here.
I mean, I don't think that the uniforms play as big a role in recruiting as it does at Oregon and Maryland. Well, I think it's more about the program itself, the coaches, whether or not you're going to get playing time, the atmosphere that you're going to be playing in. But, I mean, Florida's uniforms right now, I mean, they are what they are. We've seen what some of their alternates are, like when they had to wear the Nike Pro Combat ones, those weren't very good.
Yeah, I think Marshall's been looking at the other Pro Combat renderings that have been floating around on the internet with the alligator, you know, print and whatnot. Yeah, they look cool on the internet, but that's not realistic, and it's not cool to change the tradition of a program like Florida.
I'll tell you what I would like to see more from Florida in terms of uniform: the all blues.
I mean,
those uniforms are good. The blue pants with the blue jerseys.
I don't know. I'm all about orange jerseys, but that's just me. Anyway, Marshall has a counter, and before we get to that, I don't think you guys can really argue the influence that uniforms had on Oregon becoming like a nationally known team.
I don't think that the uniforms were the sole reason that players like Michael James and all the other guys came to Oregon. It's because they got cool uniforms.
It wasn't like they were. It wasn't
like it just
put them on the
map. Invested in the program and made the facilities amazing. Made the coaching staff came up. Everything else around the program improved. It wasn't because they get cool uniforms.
No,
and they get to look sweet on the field.
Obviously, that wasn't the only thing.
What you're trying to say is that before they were able to land these big time recruits and build the program, they got national attention because of their crazy uniforms. And when, you know, kids start seeing that team on TV, then they start seeing the program do better, and then more interest gets gathered, right?
Yes, but also, high school football recruits are not the smartest people in the world a lot of the times. I don't want to generalize, per se, but a lot of the times it'd be like, ooh, shiny uniform, that might be cool. I don't know, maybe there's one or two kids out there
Eastern,
to play devil's advocate.
Eastern Washington, they went ahead and did the same thing as Boise and made themselves have a red field, okay? Same reason. Let's draw attention to our program. Oh, kids will want to come play on a cool red field and cool red uniforms, blah, 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 blah. How'd that work out? It's Eastern Washington.
It's been like half an hour since that happened.
It's
Can
been
you
like
give
six
them some time?
Years. It's been like six
no,
years.
I thought
yes.
that was before the
no,
season
no, no, no,
they
no.
changed
This
it.
Has been like six like years.
2 years ago.
It was real recent.
It's more than 2 years. More than 2 years.
It takes
without
a lot
a doubt.
Of time.
It's been since we've been
The fact is, just Oregon's uniforms is not... I don't even want to have this discussion anymore. This is a discussion.
Nobody
is
said just Oregon's uniforms is the only reason. Nobody said that. I don't know where you got that from. But it was certainly a factor, and the coaches and people there had much admit that.
All right, well, back to Florida. I don't think they need help in recruiting or need help in any regard by switching the uniforms. I don't think that does anything except turn off the majority of your fan base.
Okay, well, Marshall's counter is that although they went winless in 1979, the Gators started their steady climb back to respectability on the field that year with an orange helmet that featured the script Gators across the helmet and blue and orange jerseys that were a huge upgrade. Aside from changing to blue jerseys, the Florida uniform has stayed largely unchanged over the last three decades. So, I mean, when they were bad before, it really helped them turn it around.
So we're saying that they're bad now? Is that what you're saying?
They are bad now.
It could be. It
they're
could
bad
be,
in comparison them. To two national championships in 3 years. They're bad, sure. They're not bad in the grand scheme of things. They're bad to us because everybody around Florida and their expectations are so high. But switching the uniform isn't going to make them win a national title again. Recruiting good players and coaching well is going to make them return to a national title and changing the uniform is not going to help with that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I tried to spice this up a little bit, but I have to agree. I think there's a lot bigger things than the uniform going on there. Anyway, shifting over. We got Gators in the NFL for you guys.
Thanks for the love anyway, Marshall. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Always nice to have the feedback. PodcastAlligator.org, everybody else. You can also be berated live on the podcast.
Hop on that bandwagon.
If you so feel. Cincinnati Bengals for Gators in the NFL was where we're going to start this week.
Carlos Dunlap, baby.
Well, no, because here's the thing. It's a two-parter. Reggie Nelson forces a fumble, and Carlos Dunlap picks it up and runs it in for a touchdown. It's an all-Gators defensive touchdown all for the Cincinnati everything. Bengals.
And last night on Sunday Night Football, we had Percy Harvin being tackled by Major Wright. How about that?
Yeah, because Percy Harvin looked like an actual NFL player again. Had seven catches for 78 yards, and Major Wright, I believe, had four tackles. So, yeah, I mean, lots of Gator on Gator crime going on here. Another one I wanted to shout out was obviously David Nelson. Yep, he had, I have it here.
Four passes for 62 yards.
Yep, and we have the Aaron Hernandez in New England.
Game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, after dropping one last weekend to kind of turn around and do that.
Did y'all see his interview where he was eating chicken?
No, really?
He's at his locker, and all the New England media is around him, and he's just holding a big piece of grilled chicken. And every time they ask him a question, right as they're done asking the question, he takes a bite of chicken, so he's chewing on chicken while he answers it. And he answers it terribly, just like he would if he was still in Florida.
Why? I don't even understand why you couldn't just wait like 20 minutes exactly. And then eat your chicken.
Yeah, so
He got done playing an NFL game.
This was during the week before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Either way.
Speaking of the Patriots, Brandon Spikes, show him a little love, 8 tackles.
Yep, we were going to get there. He's got 8 tackles, and then he had one for a loss. He had a quarterback hurry. He played an outside linebacker, which is kind of a new thing for Brandon Spikes. Unless the notes are wrong. Yeah, but that's not.
He could play strong side.
It's still tough because he's not rushing the passer.
Yeah, he's going to be more on the tight end.
He's played inside more there recently. One guy I want to shout out, we have not mentioned on Gators in the NFL yet, is Ray McDonald in San Francisco.
How about it?
He's actually been really good this year. That whole front seven's been pretty good.
Can we give Jerry Vincy some love while we're at it?
Sure, why not?
Really?
Yeah.
He's been good.
Oh, he's been amazing. He's not like...
He had 8 tackles and one for a loss against the Steelers.
Give him some love, baby. He's a great against the run. He leads the Jaguars in hurries. He's been their most consistent defensive end. Give Jeremy Mincy some love. He's not going to be Jared Allen getting 10 sacks a year, but he's going to be a consistent performer on your defensive line.
And then another guy we're going to talk about that we don't usually get to talk about, Ernest Graham, Gator in the NFL.
Started, more than 100 yards, right?
Started with LeGarrette Blount injured and ran the ball 17 times for 109 yards and had 2 catches for another 22. So
how about it?
Good weekend for Ernest Graham.
Could we get a shout-out for Lewis Murphy?
Did he do anything?
He had no stats, but he returned from injury.
So no, we're not going to talk about Lewis Murphy.
He saw the first. So how about that Rex Grossman guy?
Yep, that was my final note. Rex Grossman may be the last time he appears on Gators in the NFL. 9 of 22 passing, 143 yards, and 4 interceptions
in 3 quarters.
4 interceptions for Rex Grossman. So I mean.
Yeah.
Your time as a Gator in the NFL may be limited, sir.
We're going to start doing Gators in the CFL or Gators in the AFL.
Damn. It's time for our weekly awards. We have the Ahmad Black Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and the Will Hill Awful Life Decisions of the Week. We always start with the Wills, but we will switch it up this week and start with Tom. What do you got for us?
I thought we usually start with the Ahmads.
No.
Yeah, because we are
ending on
a bad note.
Right. Okay, well then I guess we'll start with the Ahmads.
Threw me off my game there for a second.
All right, go ahead.
I'm going to go with Clemson freshman wide receiver Sammy Watkins.
The man love for Sammy continues.
He's so good. He had 8 receptions for 105 yards and 2 touchdowns, a 89-yard kick return for a touchdown, and 1 rush for 33 yards in Clemson's win against Maryland. They were down 18 at the start of early in the third quarter. He caught both of his touchdown catches were in the second half, and then his 89-yard kickoff return was midway through the fourth quarter, and Clemson came back and won that game.
Okay, so what you're telling me is you're giving your Ahmad to a guy who had to make a comeback against a team Steve Adazio beat by 35.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's an interesting choice. Watts, what do you have for us?
You know, I know all the listeners tune in each week for their weekly golf fix. I'm going to keep that going. The President's Cup is coming up next month. And
nobody knows what that is. They don't care.
Yeah, it's a competition between the world
and
the U.S.
Care.
The
I
U.S.
Said they don't care.
Where's your sense of pride?
Is it the Ryder Cup?
This is the Ryder Cup in the other years. Ryder Cup is next year. This is the President's Cup. This is against the world.
You just give it a different
Ryder Cup is against
every year.
Europe. The Ryder Cup is just against Europe. This is against the world.
Europe's part of the world.
Yeah, well, this is all the other countries in the world that also have good golfers playing against the U.S. Anyway, Greg Norman, one of the greats in the history of the game, is the captain for the world team. And he went ahead and said Captain he would World. Not have picked Tiger Woods, which is what Fred Couples, the captain for the American team, did. Pick Tiger Woods. Everybody knows that Tiger Woods is having a terrible year.
I thought you were going to say, everybody knows who Tiger Woods is. I don't have to explain that.
He's terrible. He hasn't won. He said he would have picked Keegan Bradley, who won the PGA Championship this year, instead. He said, I picked the guys who I think are ready to get in there and play, who have performed to the highest levels leading up to it. So Fred Couples, who won recently, also gets in a mod for his response, because he says Robert Allenby is a guy that Greg Norman picked. He said, Robert Allenby and Aaron Baddeley, they're Australians. Greg Norman's Australian. And I think they're great picks, but I think I can sit here and say Robert Allenby hasn't won a tournament in 10 years. So, how about that? Exchanging barbs back and forth. Love it. Tiger Woods is atrocious, and Fred Couples is standing up for his team.
I have no response. It's golf. Moving over to mine. Wow. Your rant sucked so much, I almost forgot. Okay, I'm going to give it to the Bengals, because they managed to turn literally nothing, because Carson Palmer wasn't going to play for them and hasn't played for them and was done in Cincinnati, into two first-round picks from the Oakland Raiders who get a Will Hill as part of this.
While I agree that this is definitely a mod worthy, we have to give it, you know, a little bit of perspective, because it is the Raiders that they got these picks from.
Right, they definitely get a Will Hill as part of this.
The Raiders just, like, develop picks out of thin air somehow, because somehow they always trade away their draft picks every season somehow, and they still have draft picks to trade the next year.
And it's not even like they trade away just those season's picks. They've been giving away picks from, next year for every year.
Right.
I think they might be, like, stealing picks from New England, because everything I learned about stealing, I learned in Oakland. So
damn. Wow. Taking shots at the whole city. All right, well, I guess we can move over to the... So we do the... You guys are telling me we do the Will Hill second, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll start. We'll go with that. Tom, go ahead. What do you got?
Mine is going to go to David Stern. Still not settling this labor issue. I mean, I should be enjoying some preseason Miami Heat basketball right about now. But instead, I'm going to miss at least the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's all you're going to miss.
Up through Christmas is going to be in doubt. I mean... Trying to get that championship, man.
The whole season's in doubt.
A lot of the blame can go on other people than David Stern in this situation, though. I mean, obviously Stern deserves some due blame.
I think it's the player's fault.
It is the player's fault, honestly.
Aren't they getting like 58% of revenue?
They were getting
the whole
57% before.
The whole rest of the world gets 50%, like
right,
all the
exactly.
other leagues.
Right. And they don't have a franchise clause, and they get, you know, humongous contracts that they don't deserve. Part of that's on the owners for continuing to give it to them. But then the agents also deferred a lot of money so the players could get paid this year, like Kevin Garnett, and he's going to sit up there and preach about, you know, staying strong when his agent has deferred money for him to get paid this year. And also playing a shortened season is going to help him get one more contract and get more money. I mean, just like the NFL lockout, it's a bunch of garbage. You can point fingers everywhere. So,
and I'm choosing to point my finger at David Stern.
All right.
Respectable.
To each his own.
No argument there.
All right, Watts, what's your Will Hill this week?
I think some listeners could predict it's going to be Jack Del Rio once again, Mr. Hot Seat, facing a 3rd and 4 in the fourth quarter against the Steelers after the defense held up and got the team back in the game. They're down 17-13 with a chance to win. 3rd and 4, what do? Take your best player, and Maurice Jones-Drew, off the field and run it with Deji Kareem.
Wow, that was hilarious. I was watching that. Like, that was pretty great.
And that's been the knock. They've done that, like, so many times. Critical situations, you take MJD off the field and run Deji Kareem into the line. He's the size of Chris Rainey for a 2-yard loss. Then you face 4th and 6 with the game on the line. You send your offense out there to go for it. Gabbert calls a timeout. Then you send the field goal unit out. They kick a field goal, and they don't have a chance to get the ball back and score. So, Jack Del Rio, way to go.
I mean, do you think he's the worst coach in the NFL? I mean, because
there's a lot of bad coaches.
Tony Sperano's in Miami. So
yeah, right. Tony Sperano's pretty terrible. You know, there's a lot of bad coaches in the NFL, but if you're having a bad coach draft, Jack Del Rio is a lottery pick, without a doubt. He's top three.
All right, but watch this one. How about Jack Del Rio or Freddy Gonzalez?
Oh, my God. That's tough.
See, Watts is a Braves fan, too. He deals with a lot of bad managers, a lot of bad coaches in his day-to-day sports fan life.
If I have to choose one of them to retain their position?
Yep.
Freddie. Oh, that hurts. That hurts.
Who's your basketball team? Do you have to deal with a bad coach, too?
Basketball team? Yeah, it's
the Blazers?
Yeah, the Blazers, yeah.
I don't know much about the Portland Trail Blazers coaching situation, but it can't be as bad as that.
It's definitely not, no.
Anyway. Moving on to mine. I'm going to give mine to Miami Dolphins fans. I'm not going to give it to the team. Last week they earned an Ahmad, but it's the fans this week. I hate you all. This whole suck for luck thing has to go. I don't understand it.
There's one guy I read about in the New York Times that runs a Miami Dolphins blog that's on board with you, and he's still cheering for the Finns. So
what's the blog?
I don't remember.
Is it Finns Nation?
Probably.
Here's the thing. I don't want to go on this too long, but I will say that the people who want the Dolphins to lose can't come up with any reason other than, oh my God, Andrew Luck. When it's like,
do you need another reason?
Okay, yes, because losing games is bad for like free agents, prospective free agents. It's bad for trying to find another head coach. Having the number one pick is a stigma, and if it fails, it ruins your franchise. There's a huge contract that comes
with
that.
But Andrew Luck will not ruin your franchise.
And on top of it,
the contracts are a lot more reasonable with the new CBA.
Yeah, true. But on top of all that, it's like you're a fan of these players, and you want them to succeed at what they're trying to do as part of being a fan.
Yeah.
Until they're trying to lose, I don't want them to lose because I like these guys.
I mean, I see it from their perspective a little bit because you're just sacrificing one season for potentially 12 to 15 years of greatness. But that's just, it goes against the whole nature of fandom. So,
yeah,
I mean,
that's if Andrew Luck comes out
and right,
never gets hurt,
and
doesn't bust,
still,
and is better than Matt Barkley and Landry
and
Jones.
And there's still 10 more games for which you have to lose because the Colts are not going
to
win a game. So what happens when you do this
they
the entire season?
Jags.
That's just true. They got you do this the entire season, and then your second or third pick, and you don't get Andrew Luck. And
right,
then what do you
right.
do?
And
then what do you do? Okay. That was all for naught.
Or you go 0-16, and he goes back to school. Have fun with, like, enjoy that.
And you settle for Matt Barkley, who's, you know, just the next line of disappointment USC quarterbacks.
And if they're the number two pick and the Rams are number one, the Rams aren't going to take him because they got Sam Bradford. There's just so many reasons you don't have to want your team to lose. But
The Rams are actually going to win a game now because they have a receiver.
I think it's a good point. The suck for luck people are just gaining evidence by the day. Anyway, that about wraps up our show for this week. Send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. You can find us on Twitter @AlligatorSports. No mailbag this week, right, team?
We're not doing
that.
Mailbag this
week. Let me interject real quick. Can I add one more Will Hill to the Jaguar fan base? You inspired me.
Okay.
Mike Sims-Walker. Everybody was so upset at the beginning of the year that they did not re-sign Mike Sims-Walker. Mike Sims-Walker, the number one receiver. Oh, he's so good. Blah, 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 blah. Didn't get a deal in free agency. Got a one-year minimum deal with the Rams. And guess what? He just got cut.
Peace.
And David Garrard. Hey, David Garrard, he's so good. Nope.
Well, wait a second. David Garrard was hurt, and everybody kind of knew that a little bit, and now he's got to have surgery. And the Dolphins tried to sign him, and he turned the Dolphins down because the situation was a mess, which is why they shouldn't lose every game, because people are turning you down.
The Dolphins turned him down because
he asked for
too much money.
No.
They didn't want to pay him $1 million prorated for the rest of the season, which only would have been $750,000.
Alligator alum Jeff Darlington told me that that Garrard turned them down, and I believe what he says.
I think that he turned them down because they wouldn't give him the money that he wanted. It wasn't like, I don't want to come play quarterback. It's like, you won't pay me what I want, so sure, I'm going to turn you down.
Either way, that's enough NFL talk from us.
Can I get a second? Can I get a second, Will Hill? Because he got two.
Yeah,
you kind of gave a second.
Fine, go ahead.
I'm going to give it to the Broncos because they're just, you know, putting Tim Tebow in a bad situation.
Oh, people are going to like this. It's Tebow.
Yeah. they trade away Brandon Lloyd. They're putting Eddie Royal on the trading block. Who are they going to have for him to throw the ball to? Now that he's finally started.
Eric Decker, man.
He's
scrappy.
Literally like my favorite player in the NFL.
But
he's
they're
so
also
cool.
giving Tim Tebow service by having his first NFL start come in Miami when they're doing a Gator Appreciation
Day. Yeah,
he's
like being honored
in Miami. Yeah, it's ridiculous. They're honoring the opposition in their own stadium. It's ridiculous.
They'll do anything they can to try to sell out games and generate revenue. And all that.
Yeah, and I think they're doing it this week just because it's the bye week. Because they know they could get some Florida fans from, you know, the middle of the state.
Oh,
to come
that's
down
a good
that.
Point.
Yep.
If they don't sell out that game, like the Dolphins just have issues.
Wow. Very deep thinking from the Miami Dolphins. Anyway, again, send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. You can tweet us @alligatorsports. We put some stuff out there. You can follow us individually. I'm @GregLuca. Tom, go ahead.
@Tomas_Verde.
@WattMats, WattMats.
You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. What else we got going on? I always forget all these.
Pick up the paper, man.
Right, the paper's pretty key.
Pick that thing up.
Pick that thing
Get
up.
Some newsprint on your hands. We're one of the few still doing it.
Right.
And doing it good.
So remember, feedback to podcast@alligator.org. I almost said feedback@alligator.org, which would have been wrong. But anyway, I guess we're gonna figure some things out for this week because we have the bye week, and I'm trying to put together a special edition small sports podcast.
Small Sports-a-palooza.
Where we get in basically all the younger writers covering some of the smaller beats, maybe for 2 to 10 minutes, depending on what they have to say and how interesting it is and how good they are on the podcast, to talk about different things related to their sport. And because I know we've got a couple emails in the past where people want more of that. So with the bye week, I thought that would be a good way to do that.
Are you going to have Booth co-host that show?
Because we're going to do a lot of basketball talk, too. Yeah. So then John Booth will be in here, and we'll get that going. So keep an eye out for that. And then I guess we will be back the Friday after this Friday to get our Georgia preview on. So
make sure to tune in for the sultry sounds of John Booth. You will not be disappointed. He's the man. I'll tell you what.
You might recognize him as one of the Bayou guys, or you might not, because his voice is completely different. But anyway, we will be back with that. And until then, thank you for listening.